join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today we got some special guests on. We're talking a little conservation, talk a little hunting, a little fishing, a little wild food eating, as always. So really excited to kick this conversation off. First off, what I'll do, share a bit of news with you. So if you are tuned into the happenings of the world of Harvesting Nature, albeit very small, still very important to me, we announced 2 Mondays ago that we are holding our first ever hunting camp. And you may be wondering, Justin, what in the world is that? Well, so what we're going to do is we're going to go down to Texas. We're going to invite anyone and everyone that wants to come. We've got about 16 slots that we are looking to fill, and we are going to teach you to shoot. We're going to try to get out to about 500 yards worth of shooting with our shooting instructors. We're going to teach you to hunt. We're going to put you in the blind hunting for some wild pigs. We're going to teach you how to butcher, how to store your meat, how to get it ready for the freezer, for the table. And then lastly, we're going to finish it off with some cooking. So here's the special thing. All those people that are going to be doing these things and teaching you these things are going to be people you're very familiar with if you follow the show or you follow the website or social media. So I'll be there. Casey will be there. He's our business manager. Ryan and or Emily Long from The Way We Hunt, they'll be teaching the shooting portion. They're both very qualified and awesome long-range shooting instructors. You'll have Adam Steele there. Adam's been on. If you go back, season 2, I think we had a whole episode about making sausages. Adam is a professional butcher and game processor, so he'll be there teaching you that. And then our lovely Canadian friend, Adam Berkelmans, will be there teaching the cooking portion. So, and then, and then you'll get me mixed in all throughout, interrupting your moves as you're trying to learn and cracking funny dad jokes, because that's what I like to do. But nonetheless, it's going to be a great weekend. We're going to do a Thursday arrival, Friday, Saturday, Sunday departure down in North Texas. So it's about an hour from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. Easy in, easy out, great lodging, all that stuff. Go down into the show notes, check out the link for that. I don't want to babble on about it. I'm just really excited. Other thing, we're launching our magazine here mid-March. That is coming. Go over to the show notes, click on the website, go to harvestingnature.com/magazine. You can read about that there, sign up for notifications. I'm thinking spring equinox time period is going to be a good time for that. So that's probably when we'll release. It'll be digital. Fully digital with the option to print on demand. So it's going to be really cool. A lot of interaction in there, videos, clickable links, all these other things that you can interact with and really get entertained and inspired. That's what we're looking for. And then lastly, we're anxiously waiting in the mail our spice blend, our big game spice blend's coming out too. As soon as I get it, you will know because we'll post it for sale. It's awesome. We all tested it. Corey tested it. Corey, what did you think of the big game blend?
There was definitely on the few that I had a chance to try, there was definitely a clear front runner that I liked. And I think everybody was the same way, that they liked that particular blend.
Yep, that's the one we selected. That was my favorite too. And I tried it on antelope and venison. You tried it on whitetail deer. But we went through the gambit.
If you would have given me more, I would have done it on goose.
I'll send you some more.
But you gave me just
enough. Just enough for a sample.
Just enough.
What was I going to say? Yeah, we tested on everything. We tested on alligator. We tested on wild pig. We tested on Roosevelt elk, Rocky Mountain elk, Axis deer, whitetail deer, mule deer. Literally, we ran the gambit because we wanted to find the perfect blend, and I think we found it. So keep an eye out for that. That's coming soon. I'll talk about this one we haven't talked about in a while. We have a Facebook community page. Eat More Wild Food. Search it on Facebook. You can go there, interact with all of us pretty much on a daily basis. Lots of little extra posts and informationals and questions, and share your food and all those things happen there. But with that, I will bounce over to Corey. Corey, any updates?
Not a whole lot happening here. I think by the time we publish this episode, we will already have the Freedom Hunters pheasant hunt that I host. That's this coming weekend of recording, so it's February 19th. So we held the first one back in 2019. We talked about it on an episode. It's been what?
2 years now.
2 years now.
We're almost near three.
Because we had to cancel 2020 because of COVID. And then 2021, there were some other issues that caused us not to be able to have it. But this year, we're having it. It's here in a couple days. We have like 20 vets that we're hunting pheasants, and we're going to have some door prizes, and got some great corporate sponsors. Benelli Heavy Shot, or a couple in the Go Wild.
Nice.
Harvesting Nature's a sponsor.
Oh, nice.
So
good to know.
I'm looking forward to
awesome.
It this weekend.
Awesome. Well, that's fun. I'm excited to hear about it afterwards. We definitely like getting involved with the veteran outdoor organizations. I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I've been working with BHA's Armed Forces Initiative, their communications and operations manager for the Armed Forces Initiative. So pretty excited about that. Get to do some more fun stuff at Rendezvous and become more involved. So either way, let's shift gears a little bit, unless you have anything else, Corey.
No, that's it.
All right, I'm going to introduce you guys. So we have two guests on today, and they are from the Sportsman's Alliance. And Brian is Vice President of Marketing and Communications for the Sportsman's Alliance. He's been in the industry for over 20 years, working as a senior editor for ESPN Outdoors and Outdoor Life magazine, as well as a freelance writer and working in television. He enjoys all aspects of the outdoors, but has a passion for upland bird and waterfowl sporting dogs in particular. Courtney is the Associate Director of Communications at Sportsman's Alliance. She is also an outdoor writer and consultant. She has worked with the Outdoor Channel, Wildfowl Magazine, Delta Waterfowl Magazine, Mule Deer Foundation Magazine, Carbon TV, Sportsman's Channel, Hunt to Eat, and many, many more. Please welcome Brian Lynn and Courtney Nicholson to the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey guys, it's great to be on.
Hi, thanks guys.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. Excited to chat for sure. So we'll ask this. I'm going to open up this with a little icebreaker. This is one of Corey's favorite questions, so I know it'll make him smile. What's in your freezer that you're looking forward to cooking next?
Who goes first?
Whoever. Let's do alphabetically. Brian.
I'll just be honest. 2021 was my worst year ever afield. I have a couple of pheasants and quail is about it. I mean, it was a horrible deer season, horrible elk season. I'm just glad, like, we all hated 2020. I hated 2021 hunting season. So literally, I just got some upland birds in there. It's been, I'm looking forward to this next season and get turkey started off right here in a couple of months, and hopefully it carries through all fall.
Man, I am 100% with you. You know, moving to Colorado this year, I kind of had to get my feet under me again in a new place, and just like
that's always.
I'm glad I went to Wyoming, kind of on my yearly trip. Brought back an antelope. Thought I was going to bring back an elk. Did not. And then like multiple attempts at deer, elk, antelope, whatever, geese, all these things in Colorado, and I'm just like, ugh.
Maybe I can help you out with some pointers there. I definitely miss living in Colorado.
Yes.
But yeah, I had a similar experience this season. I actually moved from Colorado back to my home state of Massachusetts. So very interesting switching gears and moving to a new state. But I'm probably most excited about I shot my first bear this past mm-hmm. season. So pretty excited about cooking that and exploring some of my old favorite recipes and seeing what might come out best.
Oh, I do enjoy bear. We talked. I forget who I was talking with last week, but we got on a long rant about how much we enjoyed eating bear. And I was just like, I'm gonna save everybody listening that rant again, but I'm excited to see what you're gonna come up with for sure.
I'm pretty excited.
Was that a bear in Massachusetts or in Colorado?
It was in Massachusetts. It was out in Western Mass, so it's pretty tasty. I've only cooked a little bit of it so far, and so kind of got layered with other things on top of it. So very excited. And tonight for dinner in our house, we had goose ropavieja. So it's the first time I've made it with goose. I usually make it with pronghorn, and it was quite good because those geese were quite marshy. They were ocean geese. So it did the trick. Yeah,
I would say Colin, who's usually with us, but he's not tonight, he would appreciate that. So Colin lives in Oregon, and I can attest this because he brought me some goose jerky when he came, but the geese that live there are very, like, swampy and muddy, and marshy, and it just, like, tastes like mud, which mm-hmm. is fine. He's just, like, he's trying various methods to get rid of that marshiness, which is okay. I mean, if you don't enjoy the flavor, like, work it out. That's fine.
Just add more cumin. Seriously. More
yeah. cumin. That's a tip for him. What was it he did last? He texted me some pictures. Oh, he was doing, like, a Mississippi roast, but with the goose. And he said that it came out. He said the pepperoncinis, like, cut down a lot of it. So that may be something, if you've got more geese, you may want to give it a go.
Nice.
So, if you guys want to, we can go in the same order just to keep things easy. If you tell us a little bit more about yourself, I alluded to some, but where you're from and how you got introduced to the outdoors.
Yeah, definitely. I live in Washington State, so the upper left corner, and Courtney's over on the other side of the country. So, and our headquarters is right in the middle of the country, so we've got it covered. So I grew up in Washington State in the Columbia Basin, right in the middle of the state. Great waterfowling. Back then it was great upland birds. Just now it's not as great anymore, but there's still quite a few around, or at least a variety. My stepdad got me interested when my mom got married to him. I was about 10, so he got me interested in it and pretty much did the upland bird and waterfowling stuff. With our untrained Springer Spaniel running around, breaking and everything else. But, you know, did that and then got into college and got into the big game hunting. And was actually going to be a cop and went to school for that. Went on and got my English degree after the 2-year degree in law enforcement. And I was like, what am I going to do if I don't like being a cop or I get hurt, something like that? And, you know, I got the English degree. And while I was waiting to get hired and doing my background check, there was literally an ad. I was living over in Seattle at the time. There was an ad in the Seattle PI. Do you like to hunt and fish? Can you write well? We're looking for editors. I was like, awesome. You know, cool. I can do that. And I applied and got hired. And I ran the State of Texas Hunting and Fishing News magazine. And so I moved to Texas. Oh, cool. And I was down there for a year. I was like 2000, 2001, something like that, 2000, I guess. And did that for about a year, and ESPN Outdoors was launching. So I got hired there and helped launch ESPN Outdoors and run that and run Bassmaster.com, and did that for about 6 years before moving on to Outdoor Life magazine and going over to New York City and working there for a couple of years. And so I've got to see the whole country and the reddest of red states, the bluest of blue states, everything in between, you know, high-end hunts and then just some backwoods stuff and, you know, just growing up in the outdoors in Washington State with buddies and stuff. So a little bit of everything and all over the country. It's been a fun adventure.
That's awesome. Yeah, that sounds like it definitely quite the adventure. I was going to ask, as I read earlier, you're big into upland bird. Do you have a dog?
Yeah. I had to, right before we jumped on, I took my headset off because I realized that I left the window blinds open and the dog was looking out the window barking. So I went and closed the blinds real quick. But yeah, I got a black lab. This was his second season. So he worked hard and put a lot of miles in and didn't put a lot of birds up. So, and then I missed a couple when he worked really hard and He's still game to do it, though, so we're good to go.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, Courtney, so would you tell us a little bit about yourself as well?
Yeah, so I'm originally from New England, from Cape Cod, and I grew up fishing, clamming, camping with my family all over New England, Maine, New Hampshire, but no one in my family hunted. So I actually moved to New York City for college and was dead set on working in the TV industry. So I did that for a couple of years, working for a bunch of different shows on set and in post-production, and then happened to get a job at Sportsman Channel and had never hunted before, had shot a gun a couple of times, but kind of dove right in. And after working there for about a year, going to my first SHOT Show, I thought, you know, this really seems pretty interesting. I think I want to give it a try. And so I actually took Hunter Ed by myself up in the Bronx, which is a very interesting experience. Went out and bought the cheapest shotgun I could find in case I didn't like this whole hunting thing. I wouldn't be that, you know, invested. And and yeah, my first hunt was 2012, I believe, in upstate New York. So I had been connected with another female hunter who was a friend of a friend, and she took me out for turkeys. And, you know, it's been a terrible addiction ever since. So I've hunted pretty much all across this country, every species I can think of, every opportunity I've had the chance to. Every year I try to hunt at least one new state and at least one new species. And so doing pretty well at experiencing a little bit of all parts of the country, kind of like Brian has, from New England to New York City. I lived in Denver for a while. I lived in Michigan for a bit. So really east to west, experiencing all the different types of hunting that's out there. So
that's awesome. I really like what you said, trying new species, a new species or a new state, like every year. Like that's cool. I've been trying to branch out a little more myself. You know, before I was in the Florida Keys, and you know, there's iguanas. You can hunt iguanas, you can spearfish, but it's like outside of that, there's you know, there's not much to hunt. So I started looking to other states and seeing what kind of adventures I could get myself into, and I'm starting to get around to. I went to Pennsylvania this year, and then visited Corey, and we did Flintlock there. And then last spring, I was up in Oregon, so that's about as close as I could get to where you're at, Brian. And then now I've got some invitations to come up and do some hunting in eastern Washington. So it's just like kind of all over. But no, I think that's, as someone who grew up like loving to travel and loving to like experience new places, I've kind of like smushed the two together. And it's like, I may not know much about where I'm going, but you know, I'll go there and try to figure it out. Sometimes for the best or for the worst. Either way, it comes out to be a cool adventure. So, any favorite hunts or favorite adventures, fishing trips, foraging, anything that stands out to you guys that you really are like, this is the one I like to tell.
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky to be able to go on a bunch of cool hunts, but probably the biggest was going up to Alaska for the King Eider and going out to St. Paul Island, like in the middle of the Bering Sea in mm-hmm. January. And like by the time we left, the Bering Sea was freezing and locking up. And I mean, it's 40 below with a 40 mile an hour wind. You're going out into the surf to grab the ducks, and it can, I mean, death is right there. Like, you don't even know if you're going to get out there and what's going to happen. I mean, that's where all those crabbing boats are at, and we saw those out there. So that was just an adventure, literally an adventure.
Wow, that's pretty intense. That seems like the most extreme way of duck hunting that I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything more extreme. I mean, you've never felt so small. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. it was another world. I mean, you're closer to Russia than you are to Anchorage at that point, and it's just... You're out there in the middle of nowhere, and
oh wow!
You know,
so did you guys do it? You did it obviously, or maybe not by boat? Are you doing it in blinds from land towards the water?
You're either doing pass shooting, just sitting there on the rocks as they go by and trying to get one, or if the seas were calm enough, you could go out in the boat. And we went out in like little 12-foot Zodiacs sitting on a cooler. Ooh. And I'm like, what's going on? I was like, where's the life jacket? Like, don't worry. If you fall in, you're not going to need it. You're not going to be around long enough.
I was about to say, you need like the Mustang suits, and I couldn't imagine trying to shoot a shotgun in a Mustang suit.
Ooh. Yeah, so it was kind of, it took a little getting used to, and we got out there, I don't know, 2 or 3 times, I think. But if they, as soon as the waves started showing a little white cap, it was head in, turn.
Yep.
Because it can kick up real quick, and there's some nasty tides and swirls out there, so... But that's the big adventure I think will always stick out. I got the ducks in my coffee table, you know, mounted in there, a couple harlequins and the king eider and the old squaw or long tails up on the wall. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
How's the edibility? I don't know if that's a word, but I'll make it up.
Yeah, we ate some up there. we made them more like buffalo chicken strips, kind of.
Okay.
So with enough buffalo sauce, it's kind of like putting something in chili. Yeah, enough spice and whatever, tastes fine.
That's awesome. No, that's good. Courtney, how about you?
Gosh, there's a lot of hunts that come to mind. Definitely over the last 2 years, really did a lot of hunting and a lot of exploring during all of this. So I think last year was pretty cool. My boyfriend and I kind of got to share with each other some of the different styles of hunting in different places that we love. So he actually came out to Wyoming, and we went hunting for pronghorn. So I've been hunting for a couple of years out in Wyoming and Colorado, and it was his first time hunting out west and experiencing that and chasing pronghorn. So I was able to guide him on that hunt, and he got a great public land buck, and it was just a blast. I pulled a couple doe tags, and it was a really fun experience to be able to show him that new landscape and that new kind of hunting. And then we swapped off, and he showed me what he loves, which is upland hunting and specifically grouse hunting. And so we have 2 English setters, and that's really his passion, is going up to Maine in the fall and hunting for grouse and woodcock. And so I had only done a teeny bit of that when I lived up in Michigan, not successfully. And so to be able to go up there and spend time with the dogs and with his family and kind of learn about him and chase him was really pretty cool. So when it all came together of our dog had an amazing point on a grouse, and I actually connected on it, and was actually shooting a over-under that I get to borrow that was his, given to him by his dad that they had both hunted with. So that was a pretty special hunt and a pretty special season to share with each other. Two different kinds of hunting.
Yeah, two very different. And I'm a sucker for pronghorn hunting. I've loved it since the first time I did it 5 years ago, and I've yet to find something that tops it, although things are close, but I don't know. I just, it's something about it. But for grouse and woodcock in Maine, I'm trying to picture what that looks like. What's the terrain kind of like when you're up there?
It's beautiful. So we kind of went up at the beginning of the month when the leaves were still on the trees. And so I might be biased, but I think that fall in New England is just the best. You get, you know, all the different colors of the leaves, and it's just starting to get cold and really beautiful. And so you're waiting for all the leaves to fall off so you can really see the birds, kind of get better shots at them. And it's just stunning. So lots of cool rivers to kind of hunt around. And so you're kind of looking at a lot of areas that had been logged fairly recently. And so they're a little bit easier to walk to walk through and shoot through. And so definitely a lot of fun and learned a lot.
No, awesome. I thank you for painting the picture. It's it sounds something really cool. I've long wanted to go up and hunt up in the Northeast. I think it's just it presents a very unique environment, and it's you know, you find some of the same species you find across the U.S., but then there's also some very unique ones there, and it's just like it's a different environment from where I'm comfortable at. So it's something cool to think about for sure. Man, those are both really good stories. I really like. Thanks for sharing those. So let's talk a little bit about Sportsman's Alliance. You know, I think that's kind of one of the reasons we're here. So if you can, could you tell us about Sportsman's Alliance, the goal, the mission, kind of give us the good overview?
Yeah, the you know, Cliff's Notes boiled down version is we exist to protect hunting, fishing, and trapping, specifically from the animal rights movement. You know, we work in the legislature, all 50 state legislatures, state and federal court, and at the ballot box. So if there's a threat that comes up, we're working against, you know, to stop that threat. And we also have a research component to our mission, as well as an education component. But the advocacy side is, you know, probably the most visible and right now the biggest, you know, and, you know, all of them are important, but every time we lose one of those battles, everybody loses. You know, we lose a season, we lose a method, you know, in the industry loses business, and they're, you know, then it starts cycling down from to the conservation dollars and Pittman Robertson and everything else. So That's kind of the boiled down quick version.
So let me ask you this, and this is from, I guess, just a very generalized question, but you may or may not have folks. You always see people talking about it, or like the animal rights group or industry or whatever organizations you want to call them. They're always trying to sort of chip away or trying to eliminate the rights of a hunter, of an angler, of a trapper, anyone. How real is that threat? Like,
it's real. I mean, they're doing it left and right. You know, and I'm here in Washington, right? Washington State. Mm-hmm. We lost hound hunting for bears and mountain lions and the use of bait in 1996, you know. And then this year, what they try to do? They're trying to stop the bear hunt, you know.
Yep.
So they take every chance they get. They'll take a little bit. They'll come back for more later. You know, you look up at New Hampshire, we just had a bill we were working on and killed it. But it was a backdoor attempt, not even that big of a backdoor attempt. But they wanted to stop the raising of rabbits that you use in field trials. You can still raise rabbits, You just can't use them in field trials for beagles and scenting. So that eliminates scent trials in the state, which then destroys the bloodlines. Without good bloodlines, you don't have good hunting dogs. Without good hunting dogs, you're not hunting. And they take many approaches. You know, sometimes it's a direct, you know, stop this hunt, you know, stop hounding or baiting or whatever. Sometimes it's a backdoor attempt like that where you take a piece of it away. Sometimes it's an economic approach with, you know, for dogs is a good example. Make it so expensive through regulation that puppies then become out of reach financially for the average guy. If you have to...
Oh, yeah.
If a breeder or the trainer has to have certified, you know, dog houses and has to do all of these little things through regulation, that he has to hire more people, buy different stuff, whatever, endure inspections, pay fees, all that gets passed down to the puppy, to the consumer, and then it gets too expensive. So there's many, many different ways they're going about it, but it's real.
Yeah, it's always surprising. I mean, maybe it's surprising to me, like, when I see it in just like kind of the outwardness of like, no, this is what we want to do. We want to stop this particular thing. And I was thinking back, so I wrote a news article for Harvest Nature back in January when they were trying to, the Humane Society, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the Mountain Lion Foundation were trying to organize, they had like a training to have people go on and speak out against the Fish and Game's regulatory like review and say, no, we don't want this to happen. And I was like, holy smokes, just like we're going to be like holding our hunting camp of like, hey, guys, come out. We'll teach you how to butcher a pig. We'll teach you how to go shoot it. Like, on the opposite side of the spectrum, you've got somebody like, hey, here's how we want you to get up and present against hunting, and here's the theories that we have. And I'm sure you guys have seen it, like, most, a lot are not scientifically backed, theories of why we're right and everybody else is wrong. And it, yeah. I was just like, wow.
Yeah, no, and they've done that before. I actually just figured out how to change my name back, but I changed my name on Zoom and I joined one of those things last year. And they just point blank lie. They go, we're not anti-hunting, we just don't like this kind of hunting. You know, you see in Colorado, they've done that with bear hunting. Now they're trying to stop bear hunting. They take a little, they leave for a little while, then they come back. You know, they like to spin it that they're not, but they definitely are anti-hunting.
It's crazy. And I mean, we've kind of hinted at it, and you've said it very importantly. But for those that need the very obvious statement, why should hunters care about the mission that you guys have at Sportsman's Alliance?
Yeah, well, if you want to hunt, there you go. I mean, that should be enough. It's pretty point blank. And then just beyond your own personal reasons and your enjoyment, the bigger overarching piece is conservation and the wildlife management model. Right now, they are attacking predator management. Washington, Colorado, Arizona, California. That's all predator management. What happens when you don't regulate the predators? They eat more ungulates. More ungulates are gone. That means the surplus is gone, which then means tags get reduced. You start removing tags, you remove hunting. You remove that, you remove the funding. The model then begins to break. And that's what they're trying to do, is break the model so they can rebuild it in the image they want, which is, quote, rewilding. You know, and that's nature. They think this nature can balance itself thing. Nature is never in balance. A series of booms and bust cycles, you know, and then at the end of the day, wildlife is what suffers. The habitat suffers and the different species suffer as they boom and bust.
So be it that we are a fish and game food centric podcast, how do you think that wild game cooking can help the hunting community and contribute to your mission at Sportsman's Alliance?
You know, I think cooking is so important as part of our public image as sportsmen. And I think that it oftentimes goes, you know, not thought about as much as it could be. And I think that there's one big word that ties it up to is the word trophy. And so I love, you know, I lived in New York City for a long time. I probably have way more non-hunting friends than I've had hunting friends over the years. And so I have totally devised a elevator pitch, if it would, of, you know, why I hunt, why we eat wild game, why our traditions are important. And I think that really goes a long way to combat that T word, that trophy word. And I think that especially already in this season, you know, we've seen through all the testimony, especially recently in Colorado, person after person after person, everything that you read in the news sources saying, we don't do this for tradition. We don't do this for food. We don't do this for, you know, any of that. It is purely for trophy. That's it. And I think the easiest way that we can combat that is with cooking. And with teaching and sharing and, you know, the comparisons, you know, of saying, you know, you're eating meat, we're eating meat, you know, this is kind of the life cycle of, you know, the animals that we've been chasing. You know, they're living on the landscape, they're enjoying nature, they're as natural as you can get. You know, they are everything you'd want in a wild animal and everything you'd want out of nature to experience, and we're lucky enough to participate in and to enjoy from and share with our family and friends. And so I think visually, and it's just the easiest way to kind of instantly combat some of that.
Yeah, especially the trophy side. That's a great point. The other side is introducing people to it. You know, I mean, I've taken goose to Christmas parties and not told anybody what it is and thrown it out there and watch them just gobble it up. And they're like, what kind of beef is this? Like, it's goose. What? You can't eat geese. And then you get into the discussion, right? So now you're starting to talk to them and they're understanding, oh, you do eat it, you know? So it works on both sides to bring them in a little bit, to help them understand. And then that emotional response against the trophy idea, which is a huge, huge piece there, and being able to undermine that.
Yeah, I think that the shift, you know, there's been a lot of growth in the area, and I think a lot of people across the hunting community have really embraced, you know, the need to showcase food. Not only is, like, is it a natural thing to do, right? I go to a nice restaurant, I'm like, oh, look at this pretty plate. I want to take a picture of it, and I want to share it with my friends. So, one, I can either remember it later, or they can be jealous because they're not here with me. But, you know, that be aside, like, the same mindset, I think, is being approached in wild game, and not a way to be selfish or braggart about it, but is to, like, hey, we've now really started to create communities and connect people across different state borders that may or may not have talked or conversed before. I mean, look at us here. We're all spread across the country, and we're talking about hunting and food. Like, you know, 30 years ago, unless we were at a convention or happened to wander each other in a diner, like, would this even be happening? And I think it's great. And using food as that focal point to kind of bind the community together, because we've got lots of interests. You know, you've got hunters, you've got anglers, you've got trappers, you've got foragers. But when it comes down, the majority of the time, those people can sit down at the same table and enjoy a meal and share stories and be like, hey, look at this really awesome resource we have. And this really awesome ability, you know, through our wildlife model that we're able to do. And I think that I have to really kind of commend you guys for the safeguarding and the protecting. Like, you guys are out on the front lines kind of chomping through the hardship so that everybody might really enjoy this. And I thank you for that.
What are some of the issues that Sportsman's Alliance is fighting right now, like the big stuff that you're really combating?
Yeah, well, the big thing that just came out is, you know, what's going on with public lands and the National Wildlife Refuge System. You know, to kind of get to the root of this, it's actually an initiative that the Sportsman's Alliance championed in 1997, or actually before that, 94. We started working on it. And in 97, Clinton signed the 1997 Refuge Improvement Act, which says that hunting is a use, hunting, fishing, trapping, are consumptive sports, are management tools to be used on national wildlife refuges where they're compatible. And this is where you see every administration comes out, and the first thing they do, what do? They expand hunting and fishing opportunities on public lands. And that's within the National Wildlife Refuge, you know, so like millions of acres. Each one does millions. Biden just did the most back in, you know, this summer. He opened up, you know, several million acres. And so that's a huge piece, right? And that's a lot of property that people can get out and hunt and be and use. Well, Center for Biological Diversity back in November sued the administration over the 2020 expansion, which was under Trump. He expanded it to 2.2 million acres. Center for Biological Diversity sued under the premise that critical habitat for endangered species are being trampled by hunters, that lead poisoning, animals are being lead poisoned by spent ammunition, and that in the West, where there's grizzly bear overlap, that bear hunters would kill grizzly bears by mistake and or in self-defense. And so those were the premises that they were suing on. So we were getting ready to file on an amicus brief, you know, a friend of the court, and come in and with a defense, and a couple other groups were too. And lo and behold, just last week, all of a sudden, the Biden administration and Center for Biological Diversity filed a stay so they could settle, and they think they can reach a settlement and negotiate on this public land opportunity that's been around for over 25 years. And so that's that, you know, we just came out with that, you know, today, and that's very concerning. This is a big issue. That's one we championed, you know, almost 30 years ago, started to, and everybody has enjoyed since then. You know, so now we have real questions. They're settling. One, what are they settling? What are they negotiating on? You know, it's strong legal precedent, strong scientific backing. Why are they settling? What are they settling? What are they going to give up? Because that's what happens when you negotiate. You give something up. And then two, where are the sportsmen in this? Why is the administration doing this behind closed doors with people who are opposed to hunting when you're talking about hunting? So that's a big issue, you know.
I think, yeah, those are very unsettling questions for the reason that you highlighted. It's just like, I you know, we mentioned earlier, like, kind of the attacks coming from all sides, and then sort of this at the national level, but it's just weird that, you know, and for folks to understand, like, the decisions made by administrations to open up wetlands or wildlife refuge lands or any of it for, you know, for hunting opportunities, that's not just done, you know, yes, in theory, in a swift movement of a pen, but it's backed by research and all that data from federal agencies, from, you know, accredited research institutions, from hunters, from anglers. Like, there's a big collective that are providing this information forward, and it's not just something like, oh, you know what, today, 2.2 million. That sounds like a great number.
Yeah,
like, let's do it.
They're not pulling this out of nowhere. I mean, every national wildlife refuge has a management plan, and it has it for every species.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know the approximate populations. They know what the challenges are, which species are susceptible. Everything's usually conservative, you know, population-based and resource-based. So this is not like, hey, we're just going to pull this out of our ass and make it up and, you know, just go on about the day. This is all backed by data. It's you know, scientific. It's everything. So the fact that they're negotiating at all is worrisome.
Yeah, because it's nobody really has access to the information of what's being said, like what case is being pled against it, as to why that this is such a bad idea. And man, the reasons listed for the lawsuit, it's just like, there's been so many mitigations for, you know, for lead poisoning with the use of non-toxic shot and all these other things that have implemented and ingrained into hunters that it's just like, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's a big one at the federal level. Most wildlife management, however, takes place at the state level, right? Like, the feds manage the refuge system, but they don't typically manage the method and means. That was another lawsuit we were in, you know, on the preserves in Alaska, and that's still ongoing. But most of it takes place at the state level. The feds manage the Endangered Species Act and the Migratory Bird Act. The rest of the stuff is pretty much state-based. That's why you see these state attacks, and it's legislation, or they'll go through petitions in the comment period, and then they'll try to sue. And then when all recourses have been stopped, they go to a ballot initiative and they just try to put it up to a popular vote. That's where you start to get into the rural versus urban divide. And that's where we get in trouble, because those urban folks don't understand what we're doing always. They don't get it. And they don't have to deal with the consequences and repercussions of bad management decisions. It's not going to affect their life. It affects our lives when we want to go out there and shoot deer and the deer have been eaten by predators. It affects our lives when, you know, the ranchers, you know, during calving season and coyotes are killing the calves. It affects them. It doesn't affect anybody in downtown San Francisco or Boulder or Seattle or New York City or Chicago.
I the one that automatically comes to mind is it was in Oregon, and it was in 2021. It was the Initiative Petition 13,
yep,
or IP13. Like,
so that's, we've
talked about this a couple times on this show, and it's so, just like,
yeah, we gotta wait to watch that. Yeah, I mean, that's like their Valhalla, like the golden ring grabbed on the carousel type deal. Like, they're going for it all there, and we don't know where it's at, so we have to proceed as if as if it's going to be on the ballot. You know, so they have until the end of June to collect the necessary signatures. And if they hit it in July and they're all certified, it'll be on the ballot in November. But they're doing it privately, doing it private funding. They're not paying paid signature gatherers. So they don't have to report their numbers of where they're at. So we have no clue. If they're using paid signature gatherers, they'd have to turn it in like quarterly. And we'd be like, oh, there's no way they're going to make this. But we don't know right now. So there's a big coalition on the ground, and we're preparing as if it's going to be there in November.
And I'll just refresh everybody real quick that the IP-13 is basically to eliminate any time of
killing
intentional
anything.
Killing of any animal. That's agriculture.
That's a mouse.
Everything.
That's a yep. mouse in your house. I mean, this is a Dr. Seuss. It's so dumb. You know, it's like, and if you do it in the presence of a child, you've committed a felony. If you breed your dog, it becomes a sex act, you know, so then you're on the registered sex offender list. And I mean, it's just crazy. You can still eat meat. It just has to die of natural causes first.
So you cover every state and federal stuff. How do you keep track of it all? How do you find where these things crop up? How do you have the resources to fight them? And how do you just keep it all straight and know what's going on?
Yeah, that's a challenge. I'm sure Courtney can attest to that, as she's come in and seen it. And a lot of times it's like, whoa, somebody brings something back up to the top. But, you know, we have software. We have a software that many of the other NGOs have as well that is scanning every bill that's introduced in every state. Pulls out keywords. We look at it. Sometimes it doesn't apply. You know, it could be a keyword that applies to something else, NASA or something, you know, and, you know, hunting for aliens or something, you know, that doesn't apply. So we look at it, go, nope, that doesn't work. Okay, here are these. You know, these are legit. Let's watch these. Then you got to sit back and look at the makeup of different committees, different states. Like, this isn't going anywhere. We know this one isn't going anywhere. Put it on the side, mark it so if it does move for some weird reason, we can get flagged, you know, and then try to start working the back end political side of things, you know, giving calls to the sponsors. A lot of times these guys don't know what they've done. You know, they've talked to a lobbyist and they're like, oh, okay, that sounds good, you know. And so if you just tell them with a phone call, a lot of times they'll go, oh, I didn't know. You know, they either pull it, or they'll offer an amendment or an exception, which is a lot of things we do with dogs. You know, everybody likes to paint the Democrat versus Republican thing and say it's just Democrats doing this, but a lot of the dog stuff gets introduced by Republicans in cities too. You know, so we give them a call and be like, hey, we need an exception or something. And so they'll say, okay, does not apply to sporting dogs or the act of sporting or training or whatever, you know, and so we'll get an exception written in their amendment or work with it somehow. So if we can kill the stuff before we even have to put it out there, the better. You know, the sooner you kill it, the better. The longer it goes in the process, the harder it gets to get going, because they get more public behind them, they get more media behind them. And so the sooner we can kill it, the better. So a lot of times, you know, we're not always the first out the door with it, because we're trying to work the back end side of things. Give the sponsor a call. See where it's at. Look at the committee makeups and be like, oh, this one won't go anywhere. They got the committee. Or somebody telling us. A lot of times people will tell us, like, they can do what they want, but it's not going to get called up, or it's not going to get passed out, or we're not calling the vote. You know? So if we can work that back end, that's even better. But yeah, it's a process, as far as there's hundreds of bills. You know, thousands of bills, and we'll whittle it down to hundreds, and then we'll watch most of them and try to stop them before they go. And then the ones that hit, it's like, yeah, call or email or whatever we need to do.
Oh, wow. And so, Courtney, you've been with Sportsman's Alliance for a couple months now. You said earlier, how has it How has it been kind of stepping into this world and really digging in on the legislative side and kind of understanding and observing or acting?
You know, it's been really exciting. I've been with Sportsman's Alliance for about 2 months now, and even though I've been in the hunting space for quite a while and tracked a lot of these bills in, you know, the individual state where I live, on a whole, a lot of this has been quite new to me. And so working with our public outreach and, you know, our social media and our newsletter and our website, I get to kind of be a little bit of a barometer of, you know, how are we taking these, you know, sometimes very complicated, sometimes very misleading, convoluted bills and explaining them, you know, to our members, and especially explaining what we know, what we might know next, and, you know, when and how that they can help. It's been really interesting. And so, you know, like pretty much every other nonprofit and NGO, Sportsman's Alliance has been doing incredible work since, I mean, they were created in 1977, officially became a organization in 1978, and just every single day keep doing this great work, you know, that not everyone really knows about, right? It's the crux of the nonprofit. You know, they do a terrible job of, you know, letting people know the good work that they do. And so that's really kind of the goal of our department, is to walk that line between our government affairs team, who is out there every day doing the legislative work. You know, all of them are either have worked in legislature for quite a long time, some of them are lawyers, all of them have been working in this space for quite some time, and then relaying that to our members. And it's been really exciting in the past couple of years to talk to them, and then just being in the other communities that we're a part of. You know, people have really stepped up and not only gotten interested, but getting involved in a lot of these, a lot of these bills, a lot of these petitions, open comment periods, whatever is going on, and are really, you know, wanting to get educated. And so that's kind of the mm-hmm. next step of what we're working on in our department, is kind of walking that line between what our government affairs team is doing, you know, in their discussions, and then when we can kind of open it up to the public. And so that's been really interesting to see and to kind of learn about that process of, you know, okay, a bill's being introduced. Okay, now it needs to get assigned to a committee. Okay, now it's waiting for a hearing date, and doing our best to keep our members informed. You know, a lot of times it's we're kind of waiting, and there's a lot of times where, you know, some of these bills can die a quiet death, and that's kind of the best thing. You know, a lot of these committees, they're assigned their pile of bills for the year, and a lot of times, you know, they can't even feasibly get through them all, and so they try to prioritize them. And, you know, if we can get in and speak to them and kind of do some initial conversations and letters. And, you know, we do the same on our end with these, you know, hundreds of bills that we're tracking. We try to prioritize as well. And so really looking at those states that are crucial, that they've been hammering year after year, and really leaning on our partners. And so we get to work with pretty much every other NGO. And it's pretty cool that we're all fairly specialized in what we do, as far as, you know, different setups between memberships and, you know, what we do with different organizations. So it's pretty cool collaborative work.
It's cool. It's cool to hear the kind of behind the scenes. It's neat. What I was going to say is, so talking about me, average hunter, what can I do to get involved? How can I support the mission? How can I, you know, help voice my concerns? What are the best avenues to do that?
Yeah, it depends on what the fight is, actually, and where it's at. And, you know, a court case is different than legislation. So if we're talking legislation, you know, that's where you need to call your state senator, state representative, you know, and try to kill the bill or amend it or tell them whatever they need to hear. And that often varies. The message often varies and the timing often varies. Sometimes it's in a committee. Sometimes it's when it goes to a floor vote, whatever. Getting active and doing that for that state-based legislation is probably the biggest thing. You know, the other things go different ways, ballot initiatives and court cases. That's kind of out of every individual's hands and plays to the bigger public, and as well as legal thresholds and procedures. But most of the threats we face are at the state-based legislative level every single session, you know. So, you know, becoming active in that, which has been great to see, especially this cycle. And I think it kind of started in the last session, you know, with California, the legislation there, and different things like that. And then it's really ramped up this session. So it's been really nice to see that.
That's good. So I think my takeaway from that is kind of like, use our voice, reach out, say, hey, I'm a constituent. I am in disagreement with what is going on.
Yeah.
And
And do it in a smart way. I mean,
yep.
You can, you know, I mean, I was talking to some game commissioners a couple of weeks ago, and they're like, yeah, we need to hear some more about, like Courtney alluded to, your tradition, you know, mm-hmm. your culture, because this is, at the root of it, it's a culture battle between urban and rural, between hunter and grocery shopper, basically. And so, you know, talk about that, throw in the science. And do that. Tell them you're a constituent if you're in the state. You know, if you're not, if you're a non-resident, you can tell them that, hey, you do hunt there. You have hunted there. You have trapped or fished or whatever, or you plan to. You know, that's what we told people in Colorado. Like, this isn't just a Colorado issue. If you've ever hunted there or want to hunt there again and are saving to go on a Colorado elk hunt, this impacts you. You know, so state that, you know, and let it be known.
And I see, so I'm on the Sportsman's Alliance webpage now, which if folks want to get there, you go to sportsmansalliance.org. And your Legislative Action Center here, very, very useful tool. You can throw your street address in there and find your elected officials.
Yeah.
And then it kind of plugs you in. Senators, House members, executives, all those folks, and I think it's a great avenue. But I really want to hit on what Brian says, like, do it smartly. Like, not just, you know,
not just screaming in the wind or whatever. Yeah, and everybody loves the one click stuff, and tonnage wise it's great, and PR wise it's great. But talking to game commissioners and also knowing we know legislators, they read one of them, they get the idea of the gist, and then all those form letters just go into a pile. Some even have the different platforms blocked. You know, one-click politics. Guys we know in Ohio, or like 50 of the senators have them, or 50 of the House rep guys have it blocked. So it's a rule. It just goes in the trash. They don't even see it. So if you can, I know it's easy, and it feels good to do that, but if you can send it from your personal email address, not through a platform, it's much more effective.
Yeah.
You know, but both sides, you know, there's an argument for both, but the most effective is your personal voice coming from you.
Yeah, and most of those, like, emails, offices, all those stuff, like, if you start searching around the internet, you can definitely get connected with those pretty easily, too, so to find stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I think I say this a lot more, as I get more educated on the real larger hunting community, is that, you know, we really, as hunters and anglers, we have to kind of safeguard what we've got. And, you know, just as much as we're trying to expand and get more opportunity for us, for generations in the future, for everyone, like, you know, we've talked about tonight, like, there's kind of an active movement to chip away at those things. And I think, you know, I don't want to be like, hey, this is a scare tactic, but it's just like, just think constructively. Like, there are people that disagree, and that's a, you know, that is in fact a threat to our
something we enjoy. It's not a scare tactic.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, I would love it if it was, but it's not. I mean, we're losing things left and right. Like I said, Washington, Oregon can't use hounds. California can't use hounds. And that's what they go after, are these smaller niche issues. Hounds, bait, trapping, you know, those are the things they're going after, because one, not a lot of sportsmen do it. Two, it's easy to spin to the general public, you know. And so if you got a deer hunter or something going, I don't care about hounds or bait or whatever, it doesn't affect me. It does. In the long run, going down the path, it will affect you. It will reduce your tags, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's also a great story they can tell the general public during a ballot initiative, during a legislative battle, you know, and they've got media stuff that they can spin up a great story completely devoid of science and anything else, but emotion always trumps out.
Yeah, agreed. Corey, do you have any last questions before we move to the last comments?
Yeah, so you know, in talking with Brian and our government affairs team and kind of what's been going on the last couple of years at Sportsman's Alliance, you know, we've been around for quite a while, and obviously a lot longer than social media and a lot of the you know, different ways that we can disseminate information and such. And it's really cool to see, you know, this turn of a lot of times, you know, like you were saying, how do we find out about all these bills? And, you know, the bills are easy to kind of discover. It's these smaller issues. It's the petitions. It's the, you know, a meeting going on, something that someone mentioned. It's, you know, the designation of a area being changed, you know, from a national, you know, from a wildlife area to a national park. And we get a tremendous amount of information from our members. And so keeping in touch with us, you know, is pretty awesome. You know, that's what we're here for. That's why we're here for our members. So, you know, we do our very best, you know, be patient with us. We're a fairly small team. But we want to hear from you guys. You know, if there's something going on in your state, there's something fishy, give us a call, send us an email, you know, connect with us on social. And we'll do our very best to, you know, figure out the best way to attack it and to address it with our government affairs team. And so that's been really exciting to see the amount of participation from folks saying, you know, there's an issue going on, and we'll hear from, you know, email, calls, DMs saying, you guys wear this. And we're like, yep, we're on it. And they're like, awesome, this is great. You know, and it's pretty powerful, and it's pretty inspiring. You know, I read our comments sometimes, and there's some folks that say, you know, forget about that state, they're too far gone. Or some folks just saying, man, you know, I feel defeated, like just defeated. You know, we're, you know, all these groups are so much bigger than we are. You know, I don't feel my voice is being heard. You know, I don't know what to do. And, you know, we're never going to give up. The Air Sportsman's Alliance, you know, they've been doing it for a long time. We're going to be doing it for a long time. We're never going to give up, you know, not on any state, not on any species, no season, no method of take, you know, we're here. So it's pretty exciting. And, you know, we can't do it without our community. We can't do it without our members. So go on the website, sign up to become a member. We have club memberships as well. If you've got a trapping association, houndsman association, you know, come on, support us as a club, and sign up for our newsletters. So we have, you'll get our weekly email newsletter. You'll get state specific initiatives just for your state, and keep in touch with us. That's what keeps us all going.
That's awesome. Thanks for that, Corey. Now,
I was just going to ask. There's a membership program, correct? But you already answered my question.
Yeah, there's about any way you want to be a member. An individual member at different levels. You own a business, it's a tax write-off because you're protecting your business, so you can join as a business partner. Like Courtney said, if you have a outdoors club or whatever, you can join at a club level and pool your money, you know, collective money, so it's not any one person paying too much. Just about any way you want to do it, we can do it. If you want to donate to, we're a 501c3 and C4, so you can donate just to the legal side of things with our sportsman's legal defense fund if you want. And so, you know, that money will just go to fight these lawsuits. Any way you want to give us money, we'll take it.
Awesome. Well, with that, I'll leave it open. If you guys have questions, comments, or last thought you want to leave, Courtney's was very, very well framed. So if there are none, that's cool too. But anything you want to leave the guests with, or you want to ask us, or anything.
If you can just, Sports Men's Alliance, MENS, sportsmensalliance.org, and Sportsman's Alliance on Facebook, and Sportsman's All on Instagram. That's where a lot of stuff goes up, and people talk about it and share it. And so follow us, get our emails, join, share our stuff, whatever you can do to help spread the fight and protect hunting, fishing, and trapping. Thank you for having us on, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Courtney, anything?
That's about it.
Sweet. Corey, I'll go to you for last thought.
I appreciate Courtney reaching out to make this podcast episode happen, so thank you for that. And it was a pleasure talking with you guys. Like Justin was saying earlier, it's where else can you do this? Talk to people from all over the country about hunting and eating and I appreciate it.
Well, thanks guys for having us on.
Absolutely. I'm glad we could all come together at a time to chat too, and thanks, like Corey said, Courtney, for reaching out. I also want to say, like, I'll say it again, I said it earlier, thanks for keeping the fight. Thanks for keeping things moving forward and really representing us, you know. I have a love for the outdoors. I have a love for the kitchen. I like to read and write and eat and do all these things, and I always appreciate it when others' passions align with that, and then they also have their own passion, and you guys are kind of in that protection realm, and that passion shows through with your knowledge tonight, and so I really thank you for that. And awesome show. I'm excited to share it with everyone. And then for everybody else out there listening, we mentioned social media platforms for Sportsman's Alliance, so make sure you go check those out. Once you're done with that, head over to Harvesting Nature's pages. Same thing, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest. I don't know. We're probably places I don't even know about, but that's okay. Check us out there. And then one last thing, all the show notes will be online, and then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please punch that 5-star button, leave us a written review, tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.